Well, good morning, everyone. I'm Greg Haynes with U.S. Meat Export Federation. So before I started, I do want to thank Steve and Mike for inviting me to come out here, and thank you all for attending. Steve and Mike did a great job on ordering up the weather, as he said, because usually it isn't this nice. And I drove in last night, and there wasn't really much wind, so I didn't have to drive with the steering wheel like this, you know, usually. So I stayed on the road, so it was good. So thanks, guys. So anyway, I just wanted to touch base or like check with everybody. So I'm assuming everybody here has cattle, right? Is that a yes? All right. How many of you are exporting? Can I see a show of hands? Anybody? I see a couple. Actually, all of you should be raising your hands because whether you realize it or not, you are exporting your beef internationally. So there are certain cuts and items that we export like 90, 95% of. So that means some parts of your animals are going to the international markets. So you really are supplying the world. So I hope as you go forward and go home and think about this, it's like you're not just supplying beef to the area here or to the U.S. You are global suppliers. And for that, I want to thank you because of the product you're producing, you make the U.S. the most competitive. We have the best product out there, so you make our job a whole lot easier. So thank you very much. For that, I almost think we need to give you guys a round of applause. So give yourself a round of applause. So I'm with the U.S. Meat Export Federation. So we're based in Denver, so not too far from here. And we have two main missions. So really our goal is to get access into the international market so that we can export beef to these areas. Now, is it better for me to stand up here or am I in the way? Is that better? Okay. The second objective for us then is to, once we have access into those markets, is to promote the product so that the buyers, the companies, the importers, the restaurants, food service, the consumers are buying our product instead of buying their domestic product or buying a competition. So that's really our goal, to get those products overseas and add value for the producers here. So we do a variety of things. We do marketing, we bring teams here, we do technical access, so a whole bunch of different things in all these different markets around the world. So we've got offices in about 20 countries or 20 office locations around the world. So these offices cover activities in probably 90 to 100 different countries at any time during the year. So we're working globally trying to find the best products that go into each of those markets and get the best value back for those more than we would be able to get here and bring that value back to the producers. So some of these countries or these offices focus on just one country, like Tokyo would focus on Japan. Singapore focuses on the whole ASEAN region, the Southeast Asian region. So they've got about 8 countries they're working on. So it really varies, but each of these markets has their own cultures, their own tastes, their own cooking styles. So we try to show how you can use U.S. beef in these different styles and get them to purchase more and more of our product. So starting off on kind of a big global level, and I'm sorry, I've got a lot of little charts and graphs and things this morning for you, but this is the global beef supply. So you can see for the last 11 years, really beef supplies globally have not changed very much. But what we're seeing is a huge increase in demand for the product. We have 96% of the world's population outside of the U.S. The middle class outside of the U.S. is growing much faster than here. By 2030, we're going to have about 70% of the world's middle class outside of the U.S. So this is huge, huge potential. This demand's increasing, but as you can see, supply is not changing that much. That's good for us. Limited supply, higher demand creates better pricing. So this is very positive. And if we look last year and this year, the country that's leading the supply growth now is the United States. So we're ramping up our production, and this is the perfect time to do it because we have this growth internationally, this demand happening. So we're very well positioned to take advantage of this. On the left-hand side here, if you see, these are the main suppliers. So this is kind of our competition. These are the global suppliers: Brazil, India, Australia, U.S., then New Zealand, EU, Canada. So really these four on the left side here are the main competition that we have. You can see Australia, which is really our biggest competitor out there, they're down 19% this year. Well, we're up 11%, so this is good. Again, we're getting out there and we're able to supply the markets. a lot of people, and me too, I'm surprised always when you see India. India's a big beef supplier. So actually, India supplies a lot of what's really the kind of buffalo, the water buffalo meat. So they supply that. They don't consume it there because the cattle are sacred, but they found ways to be able to slaughter and export this. So they're big suppliers, but it's kind of a low-end product there. So it kind of sets the stage. They set it into the Middle East, Southeast Asia, and it gets consumers, I guess, eating beef or beef-like products. And then we can move in as they start moving up and like wanting higher quality, better proteins. And then the same with Brazil and Australia, big suppliers, but they're mainly grass-fed suppliers. Our big advantage is really the grain-fed beef, the quality of marbling that we have with that, and the ability to provide large supplies at consistent quality. So that's the supply side. On the import side, the biggest importers in the world are China, the U.S., Japan, Russia, Egypt, South Korea, and then others down there. So you can see how big China, greater China, that includes Hong Kong and Taiwan, but you look at how big that is right now, they've become this huge supplier. If we would have looked at this 5 years ago, China would have been smaller than Canada. So their growth is amazing. We'll talk about China in a little bit here, the potential there. The second biggest importer is the U.S. So we actually import a large amount of beef. And a lot of times people ask me, it's like, well, why are we importing beef? You know, why are we exporting beef when we're importing it? Why don't we just eat our own beef? Well, what we're doing is we're exporting cuts, higher quality cuts for a higher margin than we would be able to sell them here. What we're importing is really trimmings from Australia. So we've got all this great fat and everything, the trim that we have here, but we don't have enough lean meat to trim to mix in with that. So we import lean trimmings from Australia, mix it in with our fat, and that makes your McDonald's and Burger King hamburgers and things like that. So low value product that's coming in. But instead of grinding these cuts like chuck rolls or short plates and things like that, we're now exporting them for a premium. So that's bringing more value back. So this is actually good that we're exporting or that we're importing because that means we can export at a higher price. So our big markets here, or as far as the growth in exports, you can see are where our supply has been going up. Australia's down, Brazil and India fairly flat, India's up a little bit. So really, we're the ones now who can take advantage of this with the increase in our supply. Here's our top markets, if you look at them through the first 9 months of this year. So our biggest market for beef is Japan, followed by Mexico, then Korea, Canada, China, Hong Kong, the Middle East, Taiwan. So these are really where most of the product's going. And if you'll notice, and we'll touch on this later, but the main markets there, Japan, we would have had the Trans-Pacific Partnership, TPP, would have actually given us better duty rates into Japan. We're not doing that now. But even without that, it's a huge, huge market. You've got Mexico and Canada, part of NAFTA. We're talking about renegotiating NAFTA, which these are huge markets for us. So hopefully we don't pull out of those. Korea, we've got the Korean-U.S. Free Trade Agreement. So again, huge market for us. And you can see that growth that we've had the last few years. If you look at the value of the exports, this is where it's even more interesting. Mexico was number two on volume, but it drops down to number three on value. So Japan, Korea really jump up on that value side because they pay premiums, high premiums for these cuts that we don't eat here. So that value is increasing. So these markets are really key and important for us. This year, we should be exporting over $7 billion in beef. So it's pretty significant, the amount we export. If you think about it, we're only exporting about 13% of our beef right now. So it's not a huge amount, but still $7 billion. So big impact that it has. And again, those big markets, Japan, Korea, Mexico, Canada. So those account for the majority of our exports. So it's important that we maintain those markets going forward. And we expect our forecasts or our exports to continue to grow steadily. This year, we should be up almost 8%. Already through September, we're up 9%. So that's pretty good growth over last year. And within the next 3 years, we expect to grow anywhere from 4 to 5%. So that should be up over 1.45 billion metric tons. So that's a lot of beef that we're sending overseas. And again, a lot of these cuts that we're sending overseas aren't the cuts that we would normally be eating. We're not really exporting a lot of steaks, but we're exporting a lot of these short plates, you know, tongues, livers, things like that, that we don't really eat as much of. So our big advantage other than the grain feeding is our ability to send specific cuts of chilled beef. So chilled is important because Brazil, Australia, these other countries, they're providing frozen beef, which is good. So, you know, they can send that frozen beef, but chilled beef has a higher margin because the quality's higher. It hasn't been frozen. But the other big advantage of this is that once a buyer starts buying chilled beef and they have it on their menus, they're serving it at their restaurants or sell it to the consumers, they got to keep doing it because they've invested in that. They've got a brand. They've got a story. They've got this product. So if the prices are going up, they got to keep buying. Prices are going down, they got to keep buying. So it's very steady purchasing on that. With frozen, they can say, oh, prices are low. We're going to buy a whole bunch and stick it in the freezer. And then prices go up and they're like, nope, we're not buying any now. So it has an impact. That chilled is big because they buy consistently. And this is really where we have the huge advantage. You can see our frozen exports are up 34% over the last few years. Australia are up 34. Australia is down 4%. So really a big advantage for us on that chilled side and the grain-fed side. So this shows the share of chilled beef that we're getting in our major markets. So you can see we now have 52% of the market there in Japan. Before BSC, this kind of blurry blue line, that's when we had the year just before the BSC crisis hit. We just had about 42%. So we've actually exceeded that from pre-BSC levels. Korea, we're up to 53%. We still haven't even reached where we used to be, so a huge potential. Taiwan, we're up to 71%. Hong Kong, 26%. So huge potential, huge growth here. So the secret, again, as I kind of mentioned, is we want to move those cuts to the markets that demand them and pay the premiums. So you can see, like into Mexico, we do a lot of rounds, clods, skirts, variety meats. Into Central America, again, chuck rolls, skirts. You know, Asia, we're sending in shore plates, chuck rolls, tongues, livers. You know, Middle East, they eat almost all of our livers. So being able to send these cuts there is really what adds that value. Like, how many people here like liver? Do we have any big liver fans? All right, we got a few. Unfortunately, you probably noticed liver is not that cheap, right? It's like, if you can find it, you probably get your own liver. But if you go to the store and you try to find it, it's hard to find and it's expensive. That's because we're exporting most of it. We export 95% to Egypt and South Africa. So this is good. That keeps those values up. By sending all these cuts and getting those premiums, this is what adds that value. And so if there is one number you remember today, I hope it's this, $277. So these premiums that we're getting are adding $277 per head of fed cattle here in the U.S. Regardless of how much you're exporting, that increased demand is boosting those prices. And to give you a couple examples of where that comes from, so we're talking about beef tongue. I love beef tongue, but it's hard to find here too, and it's fairly expensive because Japan is buying almost all the beef tongues we have. And because of that, it raises the price. If we were buying it here, it might be $1.50, $2 a pound. In Japan, it can be $6 a pound. So that difference adds almost $13 per head just on that one cut. The same thing with short plate to Japan. We export almost all the short plate there. We eat very little short plate here. That alone adds almost $28 per head. And then short ribs and chuck short ribs to Korea, that premium that they pay adds $19 a pound. So it's huge. All these add up and bring that $277 per head. And if you break it out per market, this is where it goes. So we talked about Japan being the big one. That's where most of that premium goes. $76 of that $277 goes to Japan. $45 goes to Korea. Mexico and Canada, they've gotten about $70 of that. So it's huge. These markets are big and really have an impact, again, on moving these cuts. So Japan is our big market. That's where we see growth continuing. This year, they're going to be up 22%. So huge. So even without this trade agreement, the TPP, they're a huge, huge market. So we see that growth continuing, which is very positive. Japan's kind of going through what we call a niku boom. So niku means meat in Japanese. So they're really, really like appreciating meat more. And this is across the board. They're eating more pork. They're eating more poultry. But they're eating more beef, 16% more than last year. So they understand that meat protein is good for you. They have an aging population. The government is actually promoting more meat consumption to the aging population, so they get the protein and the nutrients that they need to remain healthy and active. So this is good, huge, huge potential for us. Have you ever seen the Wagyu, the Japanese Wagyu beef, the Kobe beef? It's like the real stuff is like really marbled. So it's like slabs of fat with little specks of meat in it. I mean, it's literally like white with little pink in it. It's really good, but you can't eat a lot because it's just so rich. So that's their kind of normal beef. So the government is promoting that they consume more lean meat. So they're like, okay, we can't eat as much Wagyu, so we need a leaner meat. So leaner meat from them is like prime and choice for us. So we could export these cuts, and prime and choice still are like the lean alternatives for the domestic beef there. So this is great for us. So one of the challenges that we have in Japan is that we pay a 38.5% duty into the market. So all our beef automatically goes in at almost 39% higher than it really should be. So Australia has set up a free trade agreement with Japan. So what they're able to do now is their chilled beef goes in at about 30%, and their frozen beef goes in at 27.2%. And that's going to slowly ratchet down over time until it gets to 19%. So we've got a disadvantage here. That's a challenge for us. The TPP, Trans-Pacific Partnership, actually would have put us on even footing with them, and it would have dropped it down to 9% for everyone. So can you imagine like how much beef we're sending now at 38.5%? If it dropped down 30% cheaper, I think they'd be eating a lot more U.S. beef. One of the things you may have heard, though, on the frozen side, though, is that we have a frozen safeguard went into place. So basically, they've got kind of a trigger point that if exports or their imports of either chilled or frozen, it's two separate categories, if the frozen amount increases by 17% over the last year, the duty jumps up to 50%. Well, that happened to us earlier this year. So all the frozen U.S. beef that we send into Japan now is paying 50%. And Australia is still paying their cheaper rate of 27.5%. And other countries that have a free trade agreement with them are paying whatever they have. Mexico has a free trade agreement, so they're paying around 30%. So Australia remains lower. Us, Canada, a couple others who don't have agreements are paying higher. So this is a challenge for us. Fortunately, most of the product that we're sending there is the chilled product, so that's good. So it's not having as big of an impact. Frozen is down about 20%. Most of the cuts we send frozen are like short plates for beef bowl. They slice it real thin and boil it up with onions and sauce and put it on rice. Kind of like it's like fast food for Japan, like the McDonald's of Japan. So that's one of the challenges, but we're still sending the product. But despite all these challenges that we're facing, since BSE, we've been steadily gaining market share there. Through the first 7 months of this year now, we've got 44% of the beef market share in Japan. Australia is down to 46%. Hopefully by the end of this year, we'll be on par, and next year we should exceed them. But you can see that steady growth back, trying to displace the Australians that are there. Korea, another great market for us. So if you look here, the blue line, that shows the per capita consumption. So Koreans are eating more and more beef all the time, too. They've kind of been big beef eaters, but now they're eating even more. So that's continuing to grow. But their domestic production is declining, and actually the same thing in Japan. They don't have the land, they don't have the room, they don't have the producers to make more beef. So that red line, you can see, their self-sufficiency is dropping. So they have to import it. And we provide the best product, the best quality that meets their cooking styles and the cuts that they're looking for. So this is a lot of numbers, so I don't want you to even think about the numbers. But basically what this is these are different free trade agreements that Korea has with other countries, the U.S., Australia, Mexico, Canada, New Zealand. This is where we actually have an advantage. We have the Korea-U.S. free trade agreement. So right now we're paying 24% duty into Korea, but Australia is paying 29.3%, Mexico 40%, Canada 32%, New Zealand 32%. So this is good. This will give us an advantage all the way to 2026. Or actually longer, 2028, because that's when Australia's duty will get to zero. But by 2026, we'll be at zero. So this is really going to boost our demand in the Korean market. So that's why I say keep making more beef, because we're going to need it in these markets. The same thing with Japan. The chilled imports are really what's taking off. So you've got an 86% increase in chilled beef into Korea this year. So I don't know, are most of you familiar with Costco? So the big warehouse chain. So Costco in Korea has about 13 outlets. And those 13 outlets sell more beef than any of the big national chains that they have there. So the national chains have hundreds of outlets. But these 13 outlets sell more than these chains. And we've been working with Costco in Korea for years and years because they were only selling Australian beef. Like, you're an American company. You've got to sell U.S. beef. They wouldn't be doing it. They're worried the consumers are going to, you know, have a reaction to it and, you know, be worried about safety. Well, finally this year, they agreed to buy U.S. beef. So they've switched over their stores. Their one store in Seoul sells the most beef per day of any Costco in the world, more beef than any Costco in the U.S. So it's huge, the amount of beef they use. So getting Costco to switch is going to probably shift about 15 metric tons just from these stores compared to the Australians. So huge, huge opportunities for us going forward. NAFTA, we talked on NAFTA just briefly, but huge, huge markets for us. So NAFTA accounts for about 30% of our exports, with Mexico being our second largest import or export market and Canada being the second largest or fourth largest. If you look at the value that it has, that it's added since NAFTA went into play, so it's more than doubled. So in 1994, it was only $13, $14. Now it's over $31 per head. And in Mexico, that's gone up to almost $40 per head. So these two markets represent quite a bit of our exports, 3% actually of our total production. So important markets for us going forward. And here's how you can just see that value that's been added over time. So when we started in 94, it was just over $20. It's jumped up the last years to almost 80. We're a little bit lower this year, but again, that's going to be jumping up. So again, huge impact that these two markets have, you know, right on our borders here. So important for us. And then a lot of you probably have heard about China. So China had been closed to U.S. beef since we had BSE in 2003. Finally, this year, they opened up and they said, okay, we're going to do it. So we have access there. There's a lot of restrictions. There's no hormones, no beta agonist. We've got to have bookend traceability, so they have to know the place of birth and the place of death for the animals. But still, huge opportunity. We've seen that growth. So the Chinese market's kind of interesting. So for them, right now, they're pretty profitable. They're like fairly big suppliers, but most of it stays there and they eat most of it. But their supply is less than their ability to produce, so they need to import. Their consumption is growing, so when you have billions of people and it's increasing 2% a year, it's a lot of beef that they're going to need to be eating. And so because of this, they're like accepting imports more. So China usually, you know, is a managed economy. They pick certain industries that they try to support and kind of control. Fortunately, beef is not one of those. So pork is. China produces half of the world's pork, and they eat half of the world's pork. Huge, huge pork consumers. But on the beef side, they realize that if they're going to like focus on producing all this pork, they're not going to be able to do beef as well. So it's not getting that support that pork does. So it's not a big target primary industry for the government. So this is allowing more imports coming in. They are like getting it from, I don't know, probably 30 different countries now, all these different suppliers. And the sales channels are interesting because China's really developing, but a lot of that brick and mortar, they've really kind of passed up. They're doing a lot of the e-commerce. Have you heard of Alibaba? So Alibaba is like the online giant in China, like Amazon, but it's like 10 times bigger than Amazon. And they're starting to sell more and more products, fresh products online that can be delivered the same day in Beijing, Shanghai, these big cities. So more and more of these consumers, if you go to China, it's worse than here. Everybody's on their phones. Everybody's doing this. You know, you got this impression like people are cruising around on bikes and stuff. It is not like that. It's like any big city, you know, but newer. All these cities are brand new. It's amazing. Just super modern, high tech, everything. So this is opportunities for us to really get in there. And their industry is very defragmented. The two top companies that are producing beef only produce less than 1% of the total beef there. So very defragmented. So a lot of opportunities for us. This is that chart I was talking about how quickly imports into China have grown. In 2011, it was barely any. 2010 was virtually nothing. And in just these 5 or 6 years, it's just, boom, become the hugest, largest importer of beef globally. So huge opportunities here. And here's where you can see that top line is the consumption. Their consumption continues to grow, but their production is declining. So that opens up the door for imports here. So unfortunately, we didn't have access into the market during most of this time. So all our competitors have been able to get in there. But now we have some opportunities to do that. So earlier this summer, we signed the agreement. We had a big event. Secretary Perdue came out for that. We kind of launched U.S. beef into China. Womai.com, one of the big web portals that sells it, got one of the first shipments. It was an air shipment, so it wasn't huge volumes, but the prices were huge. It was probably going anywhere from $50 to $80 per pound for the beef that they were selling on here, and it sold out within 2 or 3 hours. So the demand is there. So the challenge is getting the product there. We're seeing as products coming in, some of these big chains and kind of those pillars that we look at, like Morton's, Sam's Club, they're starting to carry U.S. beef. Again, supplies are kind of limited, but they've focused on that and are getting that, and so there is that demand for the product. Our biggest challenge, though, is the supply. So, again, no hormones, no beta agonists, you know, the traceability, all this. So having that product available for China right now is still pretty limited. So we're sending some product in. I think we've sent about 1,200 metric tons so far this year, so not too much. If you compare that to Taiwan, which is a much smaller country, obviously, but kind of similar demographic, you know, we're exporting a lot more. But the potential to jump up to these levels is good. So the supply is, or the challenge is the supply. So I know for producers, if we aren't using hormones and that, you're going to lose a lot on the production. It's going to cost you. So the Chinese need to know that, hey, they're going to have to pay more for these types of requirements that they have. So we're kind of in this chicken and egg situation where the producers are saying, like, hey, wait, how much are you going to pay? And do you commit to doing this before I do this? And the Chinese are kind of like, well, yeah, we want to do it, but it's too expensive. You know, can you go down here? So we're kind of, they're like saying too expensive. We're saying, well, you need to commit to this. So we're kind of in this dance right now, but it's starting, the two partners are starting to get together and kind of meet and get a little tango going. So I think this will start improving and getting better. So you're going to see those supplies starting to increase. So for China, the big deal will be our chilled. Only two countries can export chilled into China. We're one of those. The cuts that they're most interested in will be some of the middle meats, but also like short plates and short ribs. Chuck rolls, things like that. Those are kind of the traditional Asia-type cuts and the skirt meats and ribs, things like that. Some of the other items, knuckles, rounds, stuff like those kind of cuts on this side aren't quite as high demand. So that makes it a challenge because if we're only exporting a few cuts and it costs us $150 more per head, that $150 is going to be added onto like three or four cuts instead of spreading it out on all these cuts. So that's kind of the challenge now. So our focus is getting the Chinese to start understanding and using more of these different cuts. So they'll buy more and that cost will be spread out. And for them, then beef becomes very reasonable for them to put on the menus there. So that's the goal. So we're looking at the different market segments in China, the high end, the low end, the restaurants, the retail, on where we can try to move all these different cuts and get that value and bring that back to us here in the U.S. So that's going on going forward now. That'll be a big focus for us. Hopefully in 2 years when you have this again, if we're here and tell you, hopefully we'll be telling you like, yep, China is now importing all this and we're adding $50 a head just from China. So we'll see where all that goes. But that's it for my presentation. So I just wanted to thank you again. Looking forward to the bullpen sessions later this evening at 7. And if you have questions, let me know. And if not, we'll talk to you then. So thank you very much.
It's Jim Robb.